Welcome to the Business Intelligence Portal Podcast. Join us as we discuss how BI and analytics professionals achieve proper governance and high user engagement with their BI. Throughout this series, we will share practical approaches and tools for successfully implementing a BI portal. Now, let's dive in.
So welcome back to the BI Portal podcast. My name is Mike Smitherman, and once again, I have Marius Moscovici here with me. Welcome, Marius.
Thank you. Nice to see you again, Mike, and happy to be back on the pod together.
So last time we spoke in depth about sort of the evaluation process and POC process when it comes to selecting a BI portal. And so this episode, I think we want to transition more into that implementation phase. So we're going to assume that we've selected a technology here, and we're going to look at starting to plan for our rollout and the project that we're going to put in place. So that's the topic for today. Maybe we can start by sort of outlining what the high-level steps of an implementation plan might look like. What are those key phases of the project that I should be thinking about?
Yeah, so at a really high level, you want to break it down into three silos. The first silo is all about standing up your infrastructure, bringing in your software, installing it, connecting it to everything, making sure that it all hangs together. Then you've got the second big chunk of work, which is all about content onboarding, bringing all that good stuff that you want your users to be able to go and consume. You need to be able to put that on the portal. And then the third phase is about crafting and polishing a really great user experience for users, right? Because it's not about just making content available to them. It has to be about creating user journeys and ways in which people navigate through that content where it's delightful and they're coming back and they're being have a high level attachment to the analytics. So you want to think about all the work that you do within the implementation really falls into one of those three buckets.
Got it. And I guess in terms of sort of project planning in general, you know, as a sort of inroad to that, how do you think about sort of resourcing your project team and who needs to be involved? I know we've been through a POC probably, but, you know, who do you need to be pulling into this process?
Yeah, so you've got, that's a great question, and you want to be thinking broadly. There are usually a set of folks that are fairly dedicated to the project, and those for the duration of that initial launch, which are the people that are kind of creating the content, you know, putting the content on board. A lot of times it's a big push to get all that in place, and you need a team there. Obviously a project manager to guide that entire process. And then you also have lots of these individual resources that are not dedicated, but you're going to need slices of those folks. And those tend to fall into the system administration, the security team, the infrastructure team, the folks that are in charge of your Azure environment if you're connecting to Power BI or you're putting things on Azure, or if you're AWS and Cloud Ops team, making sure you've got resources from them. As well as potentially, maybe you've got a user experience team, training and rollout, various resources within your organization that are required for projects. So this combination of dedicated project resources that are just moving the ball forward, and then slices of individuals are required to enable that onboarding of content, the polishing phase, and of course the infrastructure phase, most important.
Makes sense. And how do you, when you've done a number of implementations now, obviously, and with these projects, how do you think about rollout in a scenario where it is a enterprise portal? That's sort of the ultimate goal of this. Yeah. But I'm guessing it's typically not everything on day one, right? Do you see sort of departmental rollouts? How do you see people addressing it?
It's not, you're right. It's generally, there are exceptions. Sometimes there are customers that have to do that, but most cases, it's best not to be everyone on day one, and it's best to pick, in a little bit like what we talked about with the POC, pick a team that has a very high likelihood of success right out of the gate, because they're focused on analytics. Maybe they have a lot of different reports, so that their user journey is arduous today. It's difficult for them to navigate through what they have today. So picks either a team or a persona. one or the other. In other words, either a particular functional group that you're going to address all the personas within that group, or maybe more broadly, if a particular role that then spans multiple functions, and then address the needs of that community, and use that to build the initial success. So you want, what you want to do is have success there, and then go forward. So that's like one model. Mm-hmm. Another model is that you might want to kind of have a pilot team. So in those cases where it is more cross-functional, and you just by necessity you can't turn on just part of the group organization at once, you got to put on. Then what you want to do is have a soft launch to a smaller cross-functional representation among that bigger team, friendlies, if you like, folks that are going to be giving you feedback, mm-hmm. and then roll out from there. So those are the kind of the really vertical versus horizontal approaches.
Got it. So you approach it more from sort of the end user perspective rather than saying, okay, we have Power BI, let's go sort that out. We got Tableau, yeah. let's go sort that out.
Yeah, exactly. Because ultimately, like, that would be a very incomplete
right.
Solution, right? I think we were talking about this the other day, right? There's building a portal is very much like almost building a marketplace,
right?
That's the dynamic of it. So you've got to have on the consumption side or demand side of the marketplace, all the users that want content, and they need all of their content to be there for it to be useful.
Right.
What's the use if only 80%
of 10 reports and I have 9 of them, but I have to go somewhere else for the 10th.
I might as well just go to bookmark all of them, right?
Right.
And then so that's very important. But so really you're driving it from there and then saying, okay, what are those 10? Let's bring them all those in, irrespective of type. Let's make sure you've got a really great journey through that that's way superior to a bunch of links. And then that should drive success.
Makes sense. So setup and configuration, content onboarding, user experience, and journey. So let's drill into those a little bit and talk about the setup phase and kind of what the things are we should be thinking about and planning for there.
Yeah. So I guess from the content onboarding perspective, we talked a little bit about looking at what is the most critical piece of content, and that really involves kind of studying it from both sides of the equation. Or do you look at, you talk to the audience and you understand for your personas what it is that they want to use all the time. And that's a very important data point. But then you also want to look at it from the supply side and say, well, let's look at all the dashboards that are out there from whether it's Power BI or Tableau or whatever you might use, and identify what is the usage across those and based on particular community. Right. And the reason you do that is, you know, doing the things based on looking at usage isn't sufficient, because maybe there's a bunch of content that's in PDFs and other places that people that are not being instrumented. But similarly, just asking users might not be enough, because they won't necessarily remember off the top of their head that there's a bunch of things that they do use once a month, and actually that will add a lot of completeness to the project. So you want to look at both sides.
So that then probably dictates kind of what we're connecting to and the sources we need in place. Maybe let's back up a little bit in terms of the deployment aspect of this. So I guess how much of the POC typically drives what's happening in the production environment? Like are people taking their instances and moving them into production or... Yeah, how do we go about, how do customers think about sort
of it? It depends widely. A lot of times when you're in an organization and you deploy into a POC, you have to do it in some kind of sandbox environment where it's got to be jettisoned at the end of the process. That said, in some organizations you don't. And actually people can build their POC. We've seen POC environments that become the production environment because the security network team allows them to do that. You need to, and this is a key thing, transitioning from POC to production. A lot of that is governed by the security and networking teams. So you want to understand up front, are you going to have to rebuild, or can you move what you have? Also, what did you do in the POC?
Right.
Did you just connect to a bunch of stuff and create some garbage content to prove that the connections work? Or did you build out a whole plethora of useful content that actually could be the basis of the starting point for something that's going to go into production? Maybe it's only 30% or 10% of the way there, but it's a starting point. So that varies as well.
But in terms of deployment specifically, so... Yeah, we see people I know deploying into sort of the private cloud infrastructures, on premise. What are sort of some of the things they're thinking about related, is high availability in the mix, is load balancing, all of those sort of things, are they being addressed up front, or do they kind of get brought into the mix as the deployment gets bigger?
I mean, I think those generally you want to address those as much as possible up front, okay. In the sense that and it's thinking through what you all these applications, if you're any large enterprise, you can identify classification for it from an availability perspective. How critical is it, and what's your SLA for being able to keep it up and running? Mm-hmm. Like, is it one of those things where if it goes down, an hour or two of downtime is acceptable, and as you spin up the backup environment and spin it up, or is it one of these things where, well, no, this is critical reporting; it's being used out there in the field. And so if it's not available, it needs to be a hot standby that flips over within 10 minutes or zero interruption. That will dictate what kind of high availability infrastructure you have. And then if you have you should have a pretty good idea going into this, what your user community is going to look like, and what you're shooting toward, what does success look like from an adoption perspective. Right. And based on that, then you're going to look at questions around scalability. Yeah. So there you might say, well, maybe my high availability environment would allow me to have a standalone system, but because I don't have many requirements there, but because I'm going to put 30,000 users on this, well, I want to have a horizontally scalable Dockerized container type of infrastructure for that. So you're typically going in with a particular idea, and based on that, you're bringing in the right people for the infrastructure team to aid in that helping that happen.
Makes sense. So we're deployed. You started to talk about content onboarding and sort of mapping content to personas. How do you think about sort of the organization of content in a portal, given, as you've just said, this is probably group one of many that you're onboarding. Can you talk about that?
I think there's some work that you want to do early on, because you want to, as you said, because it's group one of N, mm-hmm. you want to set processes and press that you can replicate going forward. And so there are a number of questions that you have to consider. How do you want to onboard content? And what I mean by that is it going to be one at a time? Right. Is it something where it's like, users are going to go out there, figure out which are the most valuable piece of content and onboard it? Is that scalable? Does that work based on the amount of content that you have out there? Right. Or do you need a more of a bulk approach, mm-hmm. right, where you're saying, well, I want to take everything in my Tableau environment that has usage above a certain threshold and automatically make that kind of stuff available, or start with that set and prune from there. Right. Right? So how much preloading do you need to do into the set? Then you also need to think about, well, that process of actually going from here's the candidate list that I'm going to use for onboarding and onboarding, where you're enriching metadata, you're doing all these things that we talked about before to really promote engagement in the system. Who does that? You know, and is that just a single content publisher working on their own? Does it require a collaborative process, in which case a workflow has to come into play? Right. So you're doing a lot of this spade work around process that really has nothing to do with technology, but more process around what does it mean to onboard things? Who's responsible? How is it going to work? And thinking through, this is what we're going to do for this first team. Here's how it's going to look like going forward. And the solution that you've picked, technology that you've picked, should mold itself around that, whether it's metric insights or something else, right? It's going to mold around that.
So that seems like a pretty big job, right? How do companies go about making those decisions at the content level, right? When do I pick one at a time versus needing to have some governance around the content onboarding? How do people address that in an environment where it's potentially hundreds or thousands of reports?
Reports. Yeah. It's definitely a challenge, yeah. and it requires some leadership. Mm-hmm. So from this project sponsorship perspective, if you're doing an enterprise deployment, you want to have that that center of excellence that's with some leadership there, whether that could be somebody, could be your CIO or a VP of analytics, whatever, that's really helping drive some of that decision, because you have to clear a path there, right? And you've got to pick a lane, you've got to go with it. And then you want that process to be informed by an understanding of what you have. So to your point, how much content do I have in place today? You got to do some work there to understand how much do you really want to promote, because as we all know, they're a big mess right now. And how are you going to go through that process? Is that a manual, or is it a tooling that you're going to use for that, et cetera, right? So that whole process, and who's going to do that? So to answer your question, a lot of times initially for the first rollout, maybe the COE team will do that, the entire flow, learn the product, do all that, set up the process. And then what they'll do is they'll, for the rollout 2, 3, 4, as they go out, then they'll bring in these different business groups and give them the playbook and say, okay, here's what you're supposed to do. You know, here's what we've determined based on our understanding of what's going on in their, in the environment. This is the best approach. Go follow this process with these tools, and then go and, you know, rationalize your reporting set, organize it in this way. Here's the general categories. Here's the metadata you're expected to do, which we've gotten blessed by the governance team, right? So the COE is not working in a vacuum. They're working with the initial users and publishers of content and the governance team. They're coming up with a strategy. And then if that strategy was good, then hopefully it will work well for iteration 2, 3, and 4.
And we see a lot, that's a good point. We see a lot of companies obviously talking governance and data governance in particular. How much do you see, I guess, are they the same teams, or do you see companies getting those teams involved, and how are they getting them involved when it comes to BI portal deployment? You know, where do those two worlds meet?
Yeah, it's one of the key, really it's one of the key value propositions, I think, for a portal. It's sort of undervalued, and it's one of those things that's very important, is that you want to make that linkage happen. And the way you make that happen is you go to those teams. And the COE should be engaging those data governance teams and saying, well, what are the most valuable things that we've collected and where we collected them? You know, what I mean by that from a governance perspective, PII information, data classification, terminology, and glossary information, things like that. You know, how are we capturing that today? A lot of times those are being captured at a table level.
Right.
Maybe the model's being crawled and they're identifying as PII, and then maybe they're tagging and adding glossary terms there. And then it's like, well, data governance teams do thread that information all the way back to the reporting through all kinds of, through capture of information that they're doing to know which tables used by reports. Some don't.
Right? You're talking in the data catalog tools.
In the data catalog tools.
Like Alation, Atlan, Calibra.
There's some of those have capabilities with some tools to do kind of, you know, by examining logs and so forth, mapping what's going on between the reporting. And so then that can map it to a reporting object. Others don't, and you just have the metadata at a table level. So you want to look at what you have in place. And then the ultimate goal is, then you ask the question, well, how do you use the portal technology together with the cataloging technology in this harmonious way that will make sure that all that information that's in the data cataloging tool that's valuable, those deeply valuable from an organization perspective, that they're bubbled into the catalog and they're available to the user at the point of consumption.
So I'm looking at a report, I can tell whether it contains PII data, or I can tell what the glossary terms are, if that's what's being...
You can tell I've got this, here's the key enterprise KPIs that have been mapped to the tables that are used by this report, as an example.
Right. So I'm deploying, I'm looking at a particular group, I'm understanding the content that group is interested in, I'm figuring out then how to best publish that content on an ongoing basis, because I guess it's beyond just what's there today, right? New stuff is going to get created, and have a process for, you know, documenting it and certifying it before it gets put into the
platform. And that right there is, I think, one of the key insights that people don't realize when they think about these sort of catalogs or portals or what have you. They're thinking about well, let's get it all together, publish it, and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And yes, you can move on to the next thing, but only if you did what you just said, Mike, which is what's the process to make sure that as the next report comes along that's valuable, that it gets promoted to the portal, as the report that you just published 6 months ago is no longer valuable, how do we know to deprecate it out? And do we have all the instrumentation to make that happen? Do we have a process to make that happen? Is somebody responsible for making that happen?
Who is typically responsible for that? The sort of review, if you like, of...
You want to, in large organizations, it has to be decentralized, because you can't have one organization that is kind of responsible for all of that on the onboarding and the deprecation of content. But you do want to have a central organization monitoring overall compliance,
right?
So you do need a COE or governance team or something that is looking at on a on at least a quarterly basis, sometimes monthly, is looking at these reports to tell them, well, how much content do we have that we've published out to the community that no one is using? Mm-hmm. What content is out there in the BI tools that has recently been created that is not in the portal that has high usage? And how do we, is it getting picked up?
Right.
So that they can intervene. So if there's a turnover in a particular business unit and the new person isn't really aware they need to do things, then it doesn't sort of linger and then they can intervene, provide training, and move that along. So you want that standard set, a general high-level governance at a COE, and then you want to distribute the responsibility to the organization. And you know, it's one of those things that it's like weeding your garden, right? If you do it all the time, it's not a lot of work, right? If you every weekend you go in and you putter around the garden and you like remove those little weeds that are there, and it takes a few minutes.
Right.
If you allow that thing to go for 6 months,
out of control.
You can't even find where your weeds end and the garden begins, right? Like it's like that. So it's the same kind of thing here, that having an ongoing process and having the observability and instrumentation to make sure that happens, that's really critical. So when you look at your entire solution stack, your BI portal, the tools that you have in place, etc., the big question to ask is, have you put in place the right instrumentation so that if you have the right people and they do their jobs, right, then they can keep that environment pristine?
And does it typically get delegated back to the report owners to make those decisions about, like, if you're monitoring, you know, usage and there's a bunch of stuff not getting used, you're alerting the owners of that content to make the decision?
The owners of the content to make the decision about what they need to do. They're responsible for cleaning it up.
Right.
And then the only thing the COE is doing is looking overall compliance. Is this group really clean? Keep their part of the garden really clean?
Right.
Whereas the weeds are getting a little big on this side. Let's call those guys and say, hey, guys, you got to get going on that, right? So they're just that's it. Because that... at scale, that's the only way. Now, sometimes, again, there are some organizations where everything is centralized and there's a big team that's working on even large reports, in which case, then you centralize everything. But more increasingly, with the self-service world that everyone aspires for, it's decentralized in large organizations.
Makes sense. Okay, so we're mapping content, we're organizing content, and the third piece you mentioned was this idea of sort of persona-based experiences. Maybe expand on what you mean by that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, one way to think about this is, do I have the right mental model going into this as to what you're trying to do, what you need for success, right? And I think when we look at analytics, I see a lot of people with completely the wrong model. They think of delivering reporting the way as if they're a utility, right? If you're a utility, you run the power, electricity, power, water, whatever to people's houses. And they hook up and they use it, right? There's no nothing. Just if you build it, they're going to use it, right? That's just, they need to use it. There's no way to do it. But increasingly, that isn't how people consume analytics today, right? There's so many things every day for business people that is competing for their time that they don't have to plug in and use what you give them. And they can use something else. They can go build their own stuff. They can, you know, write something in Excel. They can just ignore that analytics. So you've got to have more of that mentality, like you are more of a YouTube content publisher,
right?
Where you're competing in this ecosystem with lots of other things that they could be doing. You want to create a really compelling experience that makes people want to use your content, right? So in that marketplace, you're standing out, so to speak.
No, I think that's right. I think there's this assumption that everyone wants to be an analyst, and they're the people who sort of bubble up to the top. There are those people out there, and you get excited and you build content for them and it gets used by them. But I think they're probably in the minority in most organizations, and
certainly
people have a job to do, and it's not to be an analyst.
No,
right?
No.
And they can probably get by with doing the job without looking at analytics, right?
Yeah.
But they could do a better job if they have better data.
Yeah. Right? And that's where the real value gets unlocked.
Right.
Those people that don't realize how much of a much better job they could do if they're paying attention to the numbers, or would pay attention to the numbers if it was just easier for them to get the numbers.
Right.
If it wasn't such a big, like, oh, I gotta go look in 20 dashboards and I don't even remember where half of the stuff is. You know, I'm just gonna make a gut call on this.
Right.
Or I'm just gonna ask for somebody's opinion instead of really making it data driven. Because everyone talks data driven.
Yep.
Everyone talks a good game.
Yep.
But, you know, like, when you go into all these organizations, very seldom do you see truly data driven organization where everybody's focusing on the same set of numbers and working together. And And it's because I think it's easy enough to blame. Oftentimes people blame the consumer. Those guys, you know, we built all these things. You hear analysts all the time tell you, right? Like, I've got all these reports. I built it for my reason. They still ask me about the questions that they could just easily, very easily self-service. Everyone wants to try self-service, but it doesn't work.
So how does that? So I've got all this content organized and mapped out there. That's clearly not enough then. So how does that tie into thinking about these user experiences then?
So I think as the content publisher or the COE, as the folks that are really building out this infrastructure, we've really got to think about how do people want to consume them. Right. What's a way that, you know, like, again, go back to the YouTube example. If I'm trying to promote stuff on YouTube, I'm thinking about my audience.
Right.
What are their interests? How do I really pique their interest? How do I sustain their interest? So we should take some of the plays out of that playbook and say, well, what is the design of the analytics that's going to make that work? So as an example, maybe for executives, it's all about metrics first. Right, I want to be able to give you a dashboard with the key numbers across many different places, and only then, after I've got the high level picture, I'm going to drive into details.
Right,
or maybe I've got to look at multiple dashboards very quickly side by side. So I want to create an experience that does that because right now I'm going back and forth. So you're kind of taking the knowledge you have about what they're consuming, and then you're talking to them. And you're trying to understand what are their pain points today in consuming. You know, why don't they use more of these analytics? What are the things that they wish they could do and they can't do? And then you design an experience in the portal that's customized to that persona that makes that consumption really simple and easy. It's all about just make it easy for them to do what they want, make it visually appealing, of course, but ultimately minimize the number of clicks to get the value. Right, and that if you can do that, people will use your solution because it's easy. Right, human beings, we always do what's easy if it provides value.
And so that probably factors in things like form factor as well, where they're consuming it as well as what. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because if you're mobile and I'm giving you this dense display that is only going to be readable on the desktop, and you're actually out in the field all the time, and you're expecting your sales reps to use it off of their devices.
Yep.
It's not going to get used. So you want to be thinking about all those factors. You know, what's the content? How do they consume it? What's the form factor? What are they doing with it once they get it? And have you kind of closed the loop on all that? So
why isn't, I mean, devil's advocate, why isn't a better dashboard the answer to that?
Well, that's the problem. The dashboard starts with the idea that you have a single view that you're looking at, right? Dashboards are always, here's my cockpit, here's my piece of instrumentation on it, here's what I've got. But, you know, that might work if you're looking at a very narrow question, right? Dashboards are, generally speaking, intended to answer a very specific question. You know, how's my inventory?
Right.
How am I sales doing across this stuff?
Right.
It's too constrained to be able to do these broader type of analysis. I'm trying to understand three or four things.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out what do I really look at today.
Right.
Right. And so I think that's the reason that you can't rely on those.
It makes sense. So the portal is broader. It's looking at all the content I may have available to me. Obviously, it makes sense at the exec level, multiple departments, multiple sets of data, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's the bird's eye view
rather
than the, okay, now let me zoom in. Dashboard's very valuable when you want to zoom in and I want to really study this particular problem.
Makes sense. So we talked about sort of the content, we've talked about getting the user experience in place. Let's maybe transition a little bit more to sort of the rollout itself and how what I need to think about from a planning perspective in terms of training and onboarding and promotion of what we've put in place. How do you see companies, I guess you kind of get one shot at these things usually, right? How do you see companies approaching that?
Yeah, you only, as you said, only one time to make a first, one shot, one first impression, right? You can't do that. So you have to be very thoughtful about that.
Right.
Typically we see people doing videos, short little video clips, very effective. So you might say, here's and highlight just, 2 minutes, not 30 minutes, but 2 minutes of here's the key capabilities, here's how you're going to use it every day, here's how it's going to be a win for you, really business focused. That's really important. Brown bag lunches and sort of knowledge sharing along that kind of stuff. Another very powerful tool that people use to have questions if you're not sure about how to do things, etc. And then getting that feedback. So this is the part where I see If people sort of miss the ball, it's again that too much of that utility mindset,
right?
Not thinking about, well, how well did I do, right? If you're a YouTube publisher, a content publisher, you know immediately how you did because you see how many views you have, how many likes. Here, you want to see how much engagement am I getting, and then you want the subjective. You want to look at those comments. Mm-hmm. You want to ask your users what's working well for you, what's not. Mm-hmm. So you might do surveys on that. You might do meetings where you talk to key people. You look at people that are not adopting, right? Right. So people tend to focus on the success. Oh, we launched this thing. Right. There's 1,000 people using it. That's great, but hey, look, there's 200 here that are not.
Right.
Oh, did you miss some content? Is it they missed the email? Is it, you know, what are they looking for, a different thing from the analytics than they would? So really taking a critical view at all of those things. So it isn't necessarily a single formula, but more having that mindset that's continuously inquisitive about who did we not reach, where is it not working, and what can we do to improve it? If you have that mindset, you triangulate on the things that work.
Good. So maybe let's finish on, and we've probably touched on these, but we can bring them up again, sort of major gotchas, I guess, that you see when people enter into this process and these sort of rollouts. What's sort of the two or three out there?
I think the highest ones are just being a little bit too ambitious up front, and I was not having kind of an incrementalist approach, not figuring out that slice we talked about, whether it's vertical or horizontal, by figuring out something where you can have an early success and build on it.
So right. does that materialize in kind of throwing everything into the portal and the utility?
Throw it all in, turn it to the organization, open to the organization without really much thought, because you don't have enough time to create a persona-driven, thoughtful approach to everything. So and then hope for the best, right? That doesn't work. People come in, they check it out. Oh, that's interesting, but.
You're moving
the mess in there. They've got bookmarks already. They're like, okay, this is not that much. So you haven't, and then they're not going to come back, right? So you can't really promote them back into it after you've shown them something that's not compelling. So certainly that's a very big failure point. So be really good at a smaller deployment and then build from there, rather than taking that same level of effort and doing a really big deployment that you can only do, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep. You're much better in a mile deep and a very, very, very narrow scope. So that's number one. Number two, like we said, that frame of mind that you have around your deployment and the idea that you're not necessarily going to get everything right off the get-go. Yeah. So, which is another good reason to have a narrow focus. You can build off of that without hitting everybody. And so you want to be learning. You want to getting feedback. You want to be very thoughtful. And then the third piece is, I think, just not having a possibility of being able to. You're not really thinking carefully about what content is there, right? So that's also a huge pitfall. People rushing, taking everything they have in their environment, bringing it in, or everything that has usage. Whereas maybe people are using some things, but there's some duplicates there, and it's confusing the people. Half people are using one report, and half the people are using another one, and they're almost identical, and they say slightly different things. You want to clean all that up as part of your deployment. So you want to make sure that everything that you're onboarding is clean, it's consumable, it's well enhanced with metadata, it's of high quality. And I think that if you do those things and you're thoughtful and you have the right mindset around iterating, it's really hard to go wrong, honestly. Yep.
Makes sense. Well, thanks for that, Maris. Hopefully that's given people some insight into sort of planning out a project, and we'll delve into those areas in future episodes. But thanks for joining us today, and we'll chat to everyone soon.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Thanks, everyone, for joining. It was lovely.
Okay.
Wow. I think that was better.